Welcome to Three Books,
an Ela Area Public Library podcast. I'm Kristen Weiser.
And I'm Becca Boland.
Welcome to episode 20.
Oh my word, 20. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Big number.
Mm-hmm. Everybody likes a number with a zero or a five at the end. We made it. We did it. Congratulations. Here we are. Well, today on very special episode 20, we have with us Heather Booth. Heather is an author of multiple books, three at least, and a fabulous article published in The Atlantic. You are a librarian, the Young Adult Librarian of the Year for the state of Illinois in 2015, as a matter of fact, a library board member, editor of book lists specifically for audiobooks. You have written over 300 reviews of books and materials for Booklist and other publications as well, or primarily Booklist?
No, I've only ever reviewed for Booklist.
Okay. Yeah. And you are an editor in all of your free time as well.
Yeah.
So you don't just wear multiple hats. You're like a full hat rack.
I knit the hats and then I put them on.
And then you hula hoop while you're wearing them.
I do.
In a hula hoop made by you.
The supplies are in the car if you need them.
I'm still waiting for my hula hoop.
Go home and make some hula hoops for the library for next weekend. That's the plan.
So welcome.
Thank you.
Is there anything that I missed that you need to highlight?
No, I think that's good. That's
Girl
enough.
Scout leader.
I'm a Girl Scout leader.
Parent.
A parent. I washed my floor this weekend for the first time in like months. So that's the
that
other
deserves
part of it,
to
right?
be immortalized on the podcast.
Right?
At least
sure.
it would in my house.
Let's just set the bar. Only twice yearly floor washing when you do that many other things. I think it's okay.
I think any washing of anything at all is a remarkable thing. Yeah.
So
fantastic. Heather and I know each other because we were both young adult librarians in towns that backed up to one another. So we started a little networking group for some of the people that were around because we all served comparable populations and teens. So we did it as like a brainstorming. We're both really big on teen librarians not being an island. So we wanted to make sure we created a support network.
And then we all got to steal Becca's good ideas, which was the other benefit for us.
Oh, go on.
Yeah. <Just kidding.
laughs> So welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome, welcome. We're so glad that you're here. So we're going to go right into three books. And I was super impressed because when I asked you, you said that you've known what your answer would be for some time.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I was so excited by the concept when you guys started this that I was like, oh, what would my three books be? And then when I listen to the podcast periodically, I think, are they still? Yeah, no, they're still the same three books. Mm-hmm. And then I was driving up and thinking, is it a problem that none of them are even remotely new? But I think it's okay. Well, hopefully it's okay.
Yeah, no parameters.
I like newer books too, but these are, I think these are the three, if you just pick three.
Yeah. I feel like part of a favorite book is that it's something that has lasting power in your brain, that it's something that you keep coming back to, whether physically to reread or just in your brain space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So older books, I feel like, often are people's favorites because they've been there for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is the first book?
The first book is Dreaming in Cuban by Cristina Garcia. And this is the book I always list if people ask me if I have a favorite book. Have you guys ever read that?
No.
Anything by her?
So I have read her YA book.
Yeah.
Something about a shoebox.
She has a couple YA books now. There's one about the sisters, I think. I've forgotten the title, but
I Want to Be Your Shoebox.
Oh.
Might be the title.
Okay.
From 2008-ish?
Yeah.
I think. But anyway, I have never read any of her adult
books. Okay, so she's written a few for adults. This was her first book, and I didn't check it out from the library. I bought it at a Crown Books.
Remember Crown Books? Back in the day.
Yeah. And I remember being at the bookstore, and the teen book section, I was in high school when I got the book. I was in the teen book section, which at that time was pretty much R.L. Stein and Sweet Valley High and Robert Cormier, and that was about it.
Maybe a Judy Blume.
Maybe some Judy Blumes that had, like, strayed into the section. And it was in the far back corner of the bookstore. And nothing there was anything I wanted because I'd already read all of Robert Cormier, which I loved. But I didn't know how to make... It was Robert Cormier and Mary Higgins Clark at that point were the things that I was reading, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember walking toward the front of the store where my mom was buying something else for my brothers. And this book, the jacket, just really caught my eye. It's a lovely illustration of a woman from, like, the nose up, and she has this beautiful golden finger wave in her hair, very, like, evocative 1920s thing with, I think she has a flower behind her ear, and it really struck me. And at the time, I was learning Spanish, you know, I was in high school, and high school Spanish, I thought that was really a fun thing to do. I was liking at that, and so I grabbed the book, and it's about... three generations of women starting in Cuba with a connection to the poet Garcia Lorca. Like, not a personal connection, but the first, the grandmother in the story has this deep emotional connection to his writing. And then the generations continue, and some stay in Cuba, and some come to the U.S. and settle in Miami, and one daughter moves to New York, and then there's the third generation then, and how their lives are in this diaspora. And I remember picking this book up off the shelf, and my mom, who's always been very, very supportive of whatever I've wanted to read, but a little bit leery of this book for some reason. And I don't know that I would have been so invested in this book if she hadn't, like, turned to the clerk and said, "Is this okay for someone her age?" Yeah. Because it just has this, like, you don't quite know what's going on in mm-hmm. the book with the cover. And it was different from, you know, it was an adult market title. So I think it was, you know, me making this jump on my own into this new type
of... Well, Mary Higgins Clark isn't exactly a
right?
children's author.
Yeah. But it's like what was around. I don't know that she knew I was reading the Mary Higgins Clark.
It's funny because I also read Mary Higgins Clark, mm-hmm. and I think it probably peppered my love and interest for all things true crime.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
I think it was just feeding that part of my developing brain.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Also, the anesthesia syndrome thing, like, that's always been, yeah, kind of that came, I think, from the same type of book. Yeah. But yeah, so, no, at that point, I you know, kind of just dug my heels in, and this was going to be my book. And it turned out to be the book for me. I love the poetry in it. I was also a teenager who really was drawn to poems and poetry, and I liked, you know, writing really awful poems. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Which I think is something many of us have.
It's a rite of passage.
It is. Yeah. And I loved the Spanish in it, and I loved that the third generation character, her name was Pilar, and she was an artist, and she didn't do what her parents wanted her to do, and that's always very intriguing, I think, for a high school student. But yeah, I loved the evocative language and the way these generations of women related to one another, and the younger generation relating back to their grandparent. I had a strong relationship with my grandmother. I think I kind of saw similarities in mm-hmm. that. And it was kind of sexy, and it was about a place that I'd never been, never even thought I could possibly go. I still haven't been to Cuba, but I still think of that book and the landscapes in it. So, yeah, that's the first one.
Well, in high school, going to Cuba wouldn't have been a reality.
No.
But mm-hmm. now it's...
No,
potentially.
Not again.
Again?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
There was like a little window.
There was a little window.
There was a Cuban window.
Yeah.
And now it has closed.
Maybe one day.
Maybe someday.
For now.
Yeah.
The potential is there.
Right.
All right.
Just pay attention to the Twitters. You'll see.
Wait. The window's open. Go, 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 go.
Hurry.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
So that's my first book. I had a really fantastic, I don't know how much you want to hear about this one. I had a really wonderful experience with a library patron not too long ago. We used our favorite books as a get to know you kind of question on our website, where we have staff recommendation book lists. And a patron contacted me and said that this was her favorite book, too. And we had a really, really nice exchange. And she talked to me about how that was a significant book in her life for completely different reasons. And it was just like one of those library magic mm-hmm. moments mm-hmm. Just last year. And so it's a book that first came out in paperback. It was her debut. There wasn't a lot of money behind it. And so it's... it's one of those things that if you touch on it, mm-hmm. I don't think that you're one of a lot of people who's touched on it, mm-hmm. you know?
But it was a National Book Award finalist, wasn't it?
I think it did win some awards, yeah.
Yeah, that gives you a little more standing, lasting power.
Right, right. I think it
to
was,
both stand
it
and
was
last.
Reprinted in hardcover after it came out.
But, that's super unusual.
It is unusual.
For something to be published in paperback and then reissued in hardcover.
I'm pretty sure that's how that was the order of that one.
Interesting.
Yeah, because she then, she wrote a few others that I think, you know, had a little heft to them as well. But yeah, she's an interesting author. But she's not like one that you often come across.
Right.
Yeah. Which I think if you find a book that you can connect to people because it's not Jane Eyre, you know. It's not one everyone knows about.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fun thing to have that little connection to people.
Absolutely.
So
fantastic.
Now, your second one, I didn't even know existed.
Neither did I.
I know. This one is
homework now.
So fun, right? Did you look it up then?
Did I order a used copy of it? Yes, I did. Thank you for asking.
Yeah. So my second one is one that most people know as a Jim Henson Christmas movie. It's Emmett Otter's Jugby and Christmas, which was a book before it was a movie. And I have to say, I think I strongly prefer the book. I didn't know it was, I know, I'm guessing it's one of your favorite Christmas movies.
Yes.
It's a lot of people's favorite Christmas movies because it's such a fantastic story.
Yes.
I didn't know the movie existed, which I think is kind of bonkers. Mm-hmm. That I didn't know the movie existed until like 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, I think up until very recently, if you didn't catch it on TV.
Yeah. It was, yeah.
That was that.
And like I didn't grow up with cable.
Nor did I.
And my guess is that it was on that channel that the Muppets were on that we never got.
WGN?
Really? It was on WGN? I never saw it.
The Muppets were on WGN.
But wasn't there? Oh, where did they play Fraggle Rock? There was that was on cable. Because I remember my friends liking Fraggle Rock.
I watched Fraggle Rock too, though.
Did you really?
Yes.
Yeah, privileged. Cable-free childhood. That's amazing.
I just knew the windows, I guess.
I guess so.
I was thirsty for Henson, and I found it. Yeah. The point where when my toddler needs a diaper change, we say, do you have a soggy bottom band?
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. But I had no idea. And not only is it a book, mm-hmm. but it's Russell and Lillian Hoban,
mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm.
who are the Francis books.
They're the Francis books, which mm-hmm. I also loved as a kid.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I've probably talked about it on this, that one of my most favorite audiobooks collections ever are the Francis audiobooks, because they're read by the woman whose name I can never remember that played the mom who was the suffragette in Mary Poppins.
Right.
Yeah. What is her name? Anybody?
Oh.
Yeah, we don't have to. It's fine. I'll put it in the show notes.
There you go.
Read by whatever. But those audiobooks are amazing, and we love the Francis books in my house.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know. We always had a copy in the house, and it was a hardbound, like a turtleback copy, you know? Not printed for the school market. So I'm guessing that my mom bought it at a library book sale, which is where we got a lot of our books. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid. But it just has these gorgeous, gorgeous watercolor illustrations that are very similar to the Francis style,
mm-hmm.
but in color as opposed to having the washes. I think they're watercolor, maybe colored pencil, maybe some kind of, I'm not an artist. But it's the story of the gift of the Magi, retold between a mother and a son. And, you know, times are hard, and he wants to get his mom a wonderful gift for Christmas. And I doubt I'm going to get through the plot without crying, because I cry every time. But he wants to get his mother a wonderful gift for Christmas, and she wants to get him a wonderful gift for Christmas because he's working so hard since his dad is gone. He's a snake oil salesman. And they take the thing that makes the other one money. The mom takes in washing, and Emmett takes her wash tub to make a washboard, a wash tub base. And the mom takes She pawns his tools, which he uses to do odd jobs and make money for the family, so she can buy fabric to make herself a dress. And they're both going to compete in this talent show on Christmas Eve to earn a $50 prize. And then it's just such a sweet story. I don't want to give it away because it's, you know, it'll take you all of 20 minutes to read the book, you know, through your tears. But it's one that that I read to my kids now. I had to buy a copy used also because, you know, I got, you know, one of these same library withdrawal copies. But now it's a Christmas tradition for my family. And I feel like this is the, you know, reading aloud to my kids. And now my kids are old enough that they're reading on their own. And we read a ton of wide, like, we're reading an adult novel right now together at bedtime. But reading aloud at bedtime was a huge part of my childhood. Mm-hmm. And I feel privileged to have been read aloud to as long as I was, kind of by benefit of being the oldest of three. My youngest brother is 6 years younger than I am. And so the middle brother and I would kind of just get close when my mom was reading to the youngest one. And so I was read aloud into high school because she was still reading to my youngest mm-hmm. brother. And I just really feel like that was such a fantastic family experience and such a fantastic way to stay connected and to share books together. And even though this is a picture book and not the kind of books that, you know, my mom was reading Grisham by the end of, you know, by the time my youngest brother was in junior high. But yeah, it's just become a part of my life. You know, we read it all the time. And now my kids, like this year for the first time, one of my kids read it. And it was just like, oh my gosh, buckets of tears.
Yeah.
But it also, I think, speaks to just, you know, part of my personal ethos about giving back and looking out for folks who don't have as much and things like that. I just feel like it's a really touching story. So
mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They actually just reissued it in 2016 or 2017 with the original illustrations, but it's obviously rebound and all of that other stuff. Yes. So, and I think from what I was reading, the person who ultimately got it published had known the movie and mm-hmm. didn't realize that it was from a book. And when they mm-hmm. found out it was a book that was no longer in print, they were like, well, what do we have to do to get this back in print? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you can get a new copy now.
Oh, that's nice.
So,
I hope everyone does because it's just such a wonderful story. Yeah. I hope you put it in your library because I want more people to find it.
Yeah. Well, it'll be in our three books collection.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Nice. Probably the new one, not the.
we're not going to go hunting.
Find a turtle back.
Withdrawn.
So it's like avocado green with like you can barely see the illustration on the cover.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, my word.
A dusty pocket there with old checkout cards.
Yeah, that hits so many of my loves and feels. Yeah. So that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Well, and I didn't know about the book or about the movie.
Oh, okay.
So I was on YouTube, Kermit, watching him ride his bike into a road sign.
At the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, just after the
that's how you know.
It gets rough.
That's how you know that it's a Henson one.
Yeah.
Then he doesn't really show up again. I was like, I don't remember Kermit in that.
You see the band of rogues. I forget their name already. But,
The Nightmare Band?
Something about, yeah, it's a band.
What is their name, Heather? The Nightmare.
In the book?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like such a so-and-so in the Nightmare, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have like the flashing lights and the sparkly spangled outfits, and then Emmett and his buddies are like playing homemade instruments, and Ma's up there singing without a microphone.
Mm-hmm. That's so sweet.
I know.
Yeah,
that's so sweet.
Yeah,
it's such a good one. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
What is the third of your...
The third is Pillars of the Earth by Ken Follett, which I've never read any of the books that made Ken Follett famous, like the thrillers mm-hmm. and the, you know, the ones with airplanes on the front. And this is one, I don't know, there's just something about the way I came to this book, kind of like how I came to Dreaming in Cuban, too, that has stuck with me. And I feel like I feel like I learned from this experience so much. So there was a time in my life as an English major where if the author's name was bigger than the title of the book, I figured it probably wasn't worth reading. Right?
Yeah, that feels familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. So Pillars of the Earth was one where it was Ken Follett's Pillars of the Earth. But people had talked to me a lot about what a great book it was. And I remember when I was on foreign study, a friend of mine had, this was like the one English book that she brought with her to Spain. And I didn't even consider picking it up. It sounded awful. It was, you know, historical, and it was long, and it was heavy, and it was, you know, by this famous guy, and it was about cathedral builders, and who really cares about that? And religion, and I wasn't really into religion, and who cares about building, you know, how the cathedral actually goes together? And finally, I didn't read the book. I listened to it. I used to have a really, really long commute. At my first library job, I lived quite a distance from that location. And so I started that job at the beginning of June after I finished library school. And all summer, I listened to that book back and forth on this long commute. Because it's a hefty book. And it's it was
40 hours.
It's like 40 hours, yeah. And it was still tapes. It was still books on tape. Oh, right. Yeah. And so, but you couldn't check out the whole book at the same time because there were so many tapes. I want to say it was in two or three parts.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd listen to part of it, and then I would listen to YA on audio because that's how I was catching up with all the books that had been published before I became a young adult librarian. And then I'd listen to the second part, and then I'd take a break, and I'd listen to... But I ended up loving it. I loved it so much. I've read it several times since then. And I love the layers of it. I love the frame and how there's so much detail about so many different parts of life in that era. And I found that I actually did like the parts about building cathedrals and the parts about religion. And I just think it's a great story. It's a great story. It's gotten quite popular now, I think, because there's the miniseries, and now he's written several follow-ups to it. But yeah, it was such a different book from the kind that I usually read. And listening to it, it was the first audiobook that I remember really craving that author's, that narrator's voice. Mm-hmm. And since I've read it in print, I hear his voice, you know?
Yeah. Do you remember who the narrator was?
No, and I was going to look it up, and then I didn't. Okay. I want to say it was George Goodall, who's done, like, everything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was, you should put that in your show notes.
Okay.
This is embarrassing that I don't know that.
No, that's okay. I mean, maybe if it was your job or something.
I know, right? If I had a reason to know audiobook narrator or something like that, yeah. But yeah, I feel like I learned from that experience, too, mm-hmm. that you can't just discount a book based on stupid, arbitrary things. And, like, we English majors should just get over ourselves a little bit. Having fun.
Well, I mean, I think occasionally someone becomes a very well-known author whose name is larger than the title mm-hmm. because they're a good
writer.
Because
they're good at working.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And if they are people who actually write their own books opposed to just frame them mm-hmm. and have somebody else write them.
Yeah.
I don't know who that would be. But... maybe there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
It's not a universal truth, but...
Yeah. Well, for the book that we would pick on when I was in college was Dan Brown.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm always like, he's making so much money, our scorn doesn't matter.
Right.
He
doesn't care.
No,
okay. You can hate on him all you want.
But I was a shelver in a public library before I went to college.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always that tension. I was like, but I'd like to read the books that are in the public library, and those are the ones that are being made fun of in my classes. I'm like, I can't tell them. They'll kick me out.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Dan Brown.
But,
Da Vinci Code was a great read.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it also speaks to the different reasons people read.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can read to be swept away by the language, or you can read to be totally sucked into the story. And you can be, you know, read because it's pure escapism, or because it challenges you, or any number of combinations mm-hmm. of those things.
And the same people can crave all of those. Like, one person can crave all of those experiences.
Right.
And I think, you know, there is kind of a stigma that's being lifted, like, especially when it comes to romance, and we've talked about that before, mm-hmm. that, like, certain people read these books and no one else. You know, if you are a literary person, you don't read bestsellers, you don't read romance, you don't read westerns, you don't read XYZ. Mm-hmm. Up until recently, no one ever stopped to say, like, why?
Right.
Why? Or, you know, I was helping someone find a book for a book club, and I always said to them, oh, that's in our teen section. And she went, oh. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well... you're standing in front of the teen librarian. I didn't say that, but you know, she was like, well, at least it'll be quick. And oh, I was like,
maybe.
Sigh. Yeah. And I said, you know, occasionally a book is not written for a YA audience, but it's published for a YA audience because of the protagonist. So give it a chance. Maybe you'll enjoy it.
Do you remember what it was?
I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. It wasn't one that I was familiar with, okay. Which usually when people come, you know, when adults come to the desk and have that look on their face because right. they know that it's in the teen department, right. like, I don't know what the look is, but you can kind of, you know what it is, yeah, though. Yeah. Like, you can, I don't know how you would describe it, but it's usually what is followed up is the name of a book that you're familiar
right.
with. So it's the big ones.
The Book
it's
Thief.
And Book Thief, mm-hmm. Now Hate U Give. Mm-hmm. Those kind of books. But yeah, this one I wasn't familiar with. So
well, that's fun.
But I mean, I'm glad that they chose it for the book club.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think, yeah, there's all these weird stigmas attached to reading mm-hmm. or like graphic novels mm-hmm. or whatever the case may yeah. be. It just puts up all these walls and I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's interesting. I think you get the idea that you're this kind of person in any realm. You're gonna, you know, we put other people in boxes. We put ourselves in boxes, and we say we read this kind of book or that kind of book. Mm-hmm. Or I would never read that kind of book because this kind of person reads that kind of book. Mm-hmm. And it's not until you kind of get over yourself that you can realize that there's something in so many of these different stories.
Right.
I'm not a big romance reader, but some of the most intelligent people I know are huge romance readers. And it's
same.
Just, yeah, it's just wonderful to hear them talk about why that's the genre that is enticing to them. You know, and sometimes it's because their work life is very stressful and they like the happy, predictable
right.
Outcome. They know they're going to be satisfied at the end of the book, and sometimes it's because they love seeing this kind of character interplay and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, it might not be your type of story, but there's something in it for so many different people for so many different reasons.
And I think, too, maybe for a long time, there was, and I know this is true for me, and we've talked about it countless times, mm-hmm. For a long time, I thought the only fantasy was epic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I was like, that is not for me. But there's, you know, 100 shades of fantasy and there's 100 shades of romance. And, you know,
definitely more than 50.
I should have seen it coming.
Right?
But
right.
I totally didn't. Brilliant. But that's what I mean, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's something that I've had to learn as a reader, that I've been forced, not forced, it is of my own choice, but I have read widely in order to be better at my job,
mm-hmm.
And it has made me a better reader because I recognize now that there isn't just this one place that I want to live in, because I had said for a very long time, like, I prefer contemporary. But if all you read is contemporary, eventually you're like, I know exactly what's going to happen. Like, even when I don't know what's going to happen, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, yeah, that's what was going to happen in
yeah.
that book. And it all kind of starts to feel the same, even though it's widely different and the characters are different and the settings are different. It's like, I need something else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still waiting for that Russian fantasy that actually appeals to me. It's going to happen eventually. Somebody's going to find it for me mm-hmm. and be like, this is the one, Becca. And I'll be like, thank you, reader.
Yes.
So, you know, and it's, yeah. But Pillars of Earth like, is huge. Like,
it's huge. Yeah.
But this was like, I mean, not only huge in size, but
like, they made a video game. They made a miniseries. They made multiple tabletop games.
But it was written in, like, the 80s, I think. And I read it in 2002. So I think a lot of that has happened since then. Because he didn't write the second follow-up until, like, 2000.
Did you hear that he's writing a prequel that's coming out next year?
Is he really?
So I think it's going to probably come back. And I think more and more people are going to be talking about it.
And it was on Oprah's pick at one point. And I think
when she was only doing old books that couldn't come back to bite her.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I know she was a little gun shy about putting stuff on her.
Yeah.
On her list for a while and was putting older, more established titles.
Yeah.
Although.
I think it was an Oprah pick.
Maybe.
It was somebody's pick.
Somebody with influence?
Somebody with influence.
Heather Booth?
Right.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my word. Well, excellent. So just really quickly, can you go over your three books one more time so that everybody can remember about it?
So my three books are Dreaming in Cuban by Cristina Garcia, which is multi-generational women in the Cuban diaspora. Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas by Russell and Lillian Hoban, which is a children's picture book and just delightful. And Pillars of the Earth by Ken Follett, which everyone knows now.
Historical, epic.
Historical, epic.
Cathedrals. That's what I took away from
this. Right. Cathedral builders.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And political and religious intrigue.
12th century.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. A long time ago.
Which is why it doesn't have an airplane on the cover.
No airplanes on the cover.
Although if it did, I might have picked it up sooner.
Right? Have you read it?
Bits. Like, it's one where I'm like, I'm going to read this.
Yeah.
And I'll start. I'm like, I have so many other things to read.
Right. And honestly, I feel like that's one that had I not been listening to it, I wouldn't have finished it.
Yeah.
You know, had I not been put that first tape in and then been in the car for an hour and a half, I wouldn't have, I wouldn't have kept turning the pages. But once I listened to a few, I was like, oh no, this is one I'm going to finish for sure. Yeah.
Which transitions wonderfully into talking a little bit about what you do. I mean, the librarian side, I think we have more or less covered what librarians do on this podcast, but you have the unique job of being the, what is your title?
I'm the audiobook editor.
Okay.
Yeah. Audio editor.
Which sounds like you edit audiobooks, but that's not
what
you do.
But I don't. I think a more descriptive title would be audiobook section editor. Audiobook review section editor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Booklist is a magazine put out by the American Library Association that has reviews mainly for the public library market. And it includes print as well as audio. And so I am in charge of the audiobook section. And so I edit the audiobook reviews. I select the books that are going to be reviewed and I send them to reviewers. And then edit the reviews when they come back in, and then select the reviews that have been written that are going to go to print and the ones that are going to go online. And I edit a bi-monthly newsletter about audiobooks. And
what is that called?
It's called All Things Audio. I think if you go to booklist.com/allthingsaudio, I think it pops up.
We'll link to it in the show notes.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I do in that role. At Booklist.
And so you cover everything from children's through adult fiction and nonfiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The audiobook review section is at the end of the magazine, so don't stop reading when you get through your favorite section. Keep going, because the audiobooks are at the end. And it does cover all age ranges. So.
And you had been writing reviews for Booklist, both print and audio reviews, and that was kind of the jumping off point to this position,
I actually started writing audiobook reviews before I wrote any. So I reviewed audiobooks for adults and for young adults, and then I started reviewing books for youth as well. And then when the position came open, I was fortunate enough to slide into that job.
That's
so
wonderful.
It's been great. I've been there since last fall. So yeah.
So it's new.
It's new. Yeah, it's a new thing. It's a good thing. I highly recommend Booklist as a review source. Everybody there is so thoughtful and so creative about how they think about books, and it's really neat to see all the new books come in every week and get to figure out, you know, what are some trends happening, or who are some narrators to be watching. And, you know, sometimes you have some surprising combinations, which are kind of fun. And also then selecting the books for reviewers, which is, it's a totally different kind of reader's advisory than what I'm doing at the library. But I do think of it as reader's advisory, because I think if you like the book, you're more likely to be able to write a really interesting and engaging review of it. So I do try to try to make the matches from the books to the reviewers that are going to be satisfying.
That's really interesting. I didn't think of it as a reader's advisory experience. But that makes perfect sense.
How do you, and this may be really well known by other people, but I just like received reviews and I'm like, they magically appeared.
Right.
You know, so how do you get a list of books that need to be reviewed? How do you come by?
So the book list office gets copies of the books, or we get more and more now with audiobooks, we're getting download links.
Okay.
And then those come from the publishers, or they send us a list of here's everything coming out in the next month, in the next 2 months, and then we select the things that are going to be reviewed. Because there's so much more published than any journal could possibly review. And so we have to pick the ones that we think are going to hit the mark for the public library market, because that's the main audience for book lists. Schools as well, but it's more a library product than a general interest. So yeah.
Nice. And we've asked your three books, but you have three favorite audiobook narrators.
Oh well, I think anyone who listens to any number of audiobooks would probably put Dion Graham on the list. Have you guys listened to anything by Dion Graham?
Maybe.
You probably have. He's wonderful. He's wonderful. He has such a fantastic voice. He's very prolific, too. He reads a lot for the young adult market, but he also does things for the adult market. Pretty much all of Dave Eggers' recent books have been narrated by Dion Graham. So he's on the list.
What are other things that he...
Yeah, so Becca, you reviewed Fresh Ink, so you would have heard.
I did.
You would have heard something that he did.
Okay, so Fresh Ink, I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, is a compilation of young adult short stories that was edited and compiled by We Need Diverse Books. So I'm not sure which of the stories. Oh, but Dear Martin, okay.
Yeah, and Washington Black, I know that was a starred review for a book list. That was a real popular one. Yeah, he's just fantastic. He's just great. So, yeah,
he's won a bunch of audio narrator awards, too.
Yeah, he's won a ton of awards. Bonnie Turpin is another one. She's great.
We've talked about Bonnie a lot.
Good. So you can reference back to those.
Yeah. Hate You Give.
The Hate You Give.
Children of Blood and Bone.
I think she did.
Akata Witch.
The Sun is Also a Star. I think she was one of the narrators on that one.
I think you're right.
As well. And then I just finished listening to Bowl Away, which is the new Elizabeth McCracken novel done by Kate Redding. And it was phenomenal. It was so good. And she just has such a well-developed sense of the story. And she was just so well able to bring the tone of the novel into her voice, which I thought was remarkable. So she's my new pick this month.
Because we asked you today and not tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or yesterday. I totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. So when you are recommending audio to people, do you approach that differently than when you're recommending print to people?
Yeah. I think when people come in and they're looking for an audio book, sometimes they are just looking for a great story, but usually if they're asking for an audiobook, they're asking for a specific listening experience. Like they're going to, I mean, we've all encountered the family road trip, or my spouse and I, or my partner and I are going to be driving together and we need a book that we're both going to like. Or we have in my community a lot of commuters. It's very much a train commuter community. And so lots of people listen on their daily commute. And the book that you want to listen to that's going to be a hit with you and your kids or you and your partner might be different from the one that you want to spend your morning and evening commute with. So trying to figure out when are they going to be listening, what's the context for that listening experience, I think is important. A lot of the time when people haven't listened to audiobooks very much, like they just got a smartphone. It's not happening so much anymore, but for a while it was they just got a smartphone. Their kids or their grandkids just told them they can get audiobooks at the library, and so we get them set up. And they haven't listened to audiobooks before. I like to suggest that they start with a book like Fresh Ink, or a couple years back, Penguin Random House did a great collection of Grimm's fairy tales on audio.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If you do something like that, you can hear a bunch of different voices. And sometimes it's the story that gets you, and sometimes it's the voice that gets you. And if you find a couple voices that you really like, I know for a long time I would listen to anything Kirby Hayborn did. He was great. He still is great.
Did you think of anything?
The one, he did Black Swan Green, which I thought was really well done, which is British, set in the 80s. And then he did Life of Pi on audio, which that was one of those audiobooks that really bowled me over because he's narrating in this kind of clipped Indian American accent. And then all of a sudden, if you remember how Life of Pi works, more characters emerge later on in the story. And I remember being in the car because that's where I traditionally have listened to most of my audiobooks and thinking, oh, I didn't know this was a full cast recording when I picked it up.
Wow.
And it's not. Yeah. He just had this, the transformation was so swift and so complete that it was really wonderful to hear this interplay of characters and then to realize that it was all the same person doing that was pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I am always super, super impressed when a narrator can change the tone or the way that they narrate so subtly that by the end, you're like, oh, like I heard it change. I heard the evolution of this character in the voice, mm-hmm. but it wasn't until we got to the end mm-hmm. and like the thing happened mm-hmm. that I even knew it was happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, phenomenal. And sometimes it's a book that, like, is kind of under the radar in terms of print, mm-hmm. but the audio is so astounding.
Yeah, yeah.
That you find yourself, like, recommending it more or mm-hmm. whatever, just because the experience of listening was so mm-hmm. intense or profound or yeah. whatever.
Last month, May, was Mystery Month for Booklist, and I did a list in that for mystery series narrators that are, you know, well-loved. And there are a couple in there, the Flavia DeLuf books mm-hmm. in particular, where there's one narrator that does them all and is able to age a character from, you know, their teenage years up through adulthood and just how you're able to continue to be true to that character at that point in their life, I think, and knowing who they used to be and knowing now who they are, I think is a really great skill. I think it's great when they bring on, you know, the series narrator and you get to really know that voice.
Or it's so. Very sad when that series narrator goes away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that has happened a time or two.
That's really interesting. I think there was a long time where when I told people I listened to audiobooks, they were kind of like, like that it was cheating somehow, or like just something you did when you were in the car, or like, oh yeah, so you have a commute, so that's why you do that, mm-hmm. or whatever the case may be. And I think that the availability of audiobooks digitally, the ability to check them out from the library through Hoopla or Overdrive or whatever, or if you have an Audible account or some combination thereof, has really like made for this boom in terms of audiobooks. And I don't know if audiobooks were always great because I feel like they weren't, or now it's just that they can get like big stars to narrate, or you know, the strongest of the audiobook readers are working more than they ever have before. Like, I don't know what it is, mm-hmm. but it just seems to me that like there are so many audiobook available. And I think probably maybe it's the digital thing, because yeah. you only had access to what your library had, or, you know, what you could interlibrary loan previously on cassette mm-hmm. or CD or Playaway or whatever. And now you have this like whole mm-hmm. world library available to you. Yeah. So,
well, so audiobooks are the fast, from what I've read, that they continue to be the fastest growing market in the publishing world. So
isn't it so funny yeah. that 15 years ago or whatever, we were talking about the death of the book,
right.
and everyone was sure that it was going to be ebooks. Mm-hmm. And I am not trying to imply that audiobooks are killing books, because I don't think they are. But I feel like this is not something that anyone saw coming.
No, I don't think so.
Because audiobooks have been around since the cassette tape.
Yeah, yeah. Since records. I have audiobooks from my childhood.
Absolutely, so. With the ding, and then you flip the mm-hmm. thing, yeah. and yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's growing so fast. So we need more narrators to record all of these books, because, you know, Bonnie Turpin and Kirby Hayborn, and they can't do them all.
Right, absolutely.
So just like so many parts of publishing are becoming diversified,
yeah.
I think the audiobook narrator pool is also becoming diversified, and that's going to bring different perspectives, and that's going to only enrich the product in the end, is to have different people who bring their own experience mm-hmm. to the recording and their own training to the recording. So I do think, I don't mean to imply that older audiobooks were not good in any way, but there's such a wide variety now. They can right. be good in different ways.
But I feel like every once in a while, when I first started listening to audiobooks, I'd get a dud. And I'm not mm-hmm. going to call anything out, because I can't even remember what it was, mm-hmm. but it's less likely for me to not finish an audiobook than a print book.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there was a long time where I did not give myself permission to not finish a book in general.
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel like I am far more likely to finish an audiobook than a print book that I don't love,
mm-hmm.
just to kind of like... Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think it's a lot easier to continue reading an audiobook, especially if you have a lot of print books waiting for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to not pick up the one that isn't thrilling you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and you can sneak in the audio throughout your day
mm-hmm.
in ways that you can't, like, pick up a book.
That's very
true. You know,
yeah.
like, you can't do the dishes and read a book at the same time.
Right.
Like, I have to listen. I have tried to read at stoplights. Doesn't go well.
Yeah.
So I think
Three Books Podcast does not endorse reading at stoplights.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting to me, though, too, not only are there more, but they're branching out. So now they're taking, you know, there's always been, like, radio theater, but they're also taking now scripts
mm-hmm.
and sending those to audio and trying to incorporate some of the same... like cues that you get visually
mm-hmm.
When you're seeing a play or a musical, and trying to incorporate that. So you're getting the script, but you're also getting the cues so you mm-hmm. can see what's happening. And they're just like developing, you know, these audios in mm-hmm. ways that are amazing to me, and graphic novels as well,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, there's just no,
right.
it doesn't, you know, you're not really locked into just pure print anymore.
I think that's unbelievably interesting, the way that they're making more graphic novels into audiobooks. Because that was the thing where I was like, well, that's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And now, yeah, there's more and more of them that are. And like, was it Angels in America that you were thinking about? Because
yes.
they just released that.
Yes.
And I cannot wait to listen to that.
I have it on my shelf, and the reviewer just thought it was wonderful. So I'm really eager to start listening to that one. LA Theater Works has always done plays for the audiobook market,
mm-hmm.
and they're wonderful. They're just they're fantastic to listen to. But that there are so many more now that I think it's wonderful to bring more stories this mm-hmm. way.
I think Rael Shakespeare mm-hmm. company does a lot of the audio.
They do.
Adaptions yeah. of mm-hmm. things. And I think the whole interesting, like, having a set, like, an audiobook released and then re-released as a full cast is mm-hmm. something that's happening more and more, too.
Yeah. Right.
It's just so interesting. Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like they used to add, some audiobooks would add, I can't think of the term for it, but, like, sound effects. Mm-hmm. And I always, that was always, like, super eye-rolly to me. But now I feel like it's being done in a more sophisticated mm-hmm. way, mm-hmm. where it's less, it doesn't take you out of the story, it just enhances the story.
There was one, Believe Me, I think it was what it was called, last year that came out, that had the, almost a play within the narrative, where there is, was mainly one narrator, but periodically when this character would be in a specific situation, you would this full cast recording would come in and the tone was completely different, and it really gives you the sense of this character's experiencing this part of her life in a different way than she's relating the rest of her life to you, which I think is really a fantastic thing. And there were sound effects and things like that as well. So it very much gave it a theatrical feel, which I think is neat. I think we're listening so much more now because of the downloadable thing and because of podcasts and because of the easy accessibility. Everybody always has a player on them. Mm-hmm. So where sound effects used to be kind of eye-rolly, we have all been exposed to so many more diverse listening experiences mm-hmm. that maybe we're more less judgy and more open to these new ways of telling stories.
And it might be layered as well. Mm-hmm. Like, the quality of it might actually be better, and it might also be something that our ears are more attuned to. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that's always hard when you're trying to I don't want to say, like, talk someone into, but when you're trying to make a case for audiobooks, I feel like something that I have to say a lot, especially to middle schoolers and high schoolers, is that it's a muscle, it's a, like anything else. You know, at first it might feel kind of weird or different, but the more you listen, the better you will be at listening.
Yeah.
Which is a strange thought.
Right.
Because we feel like we listen all the time.
But it's different, too. Like, I think we've all, anybody who's listening to an audiobook, or even the news and the radio, there's that moment where you're like, wait, what? Wait, now you're here? What? How did this happen? And yeah. you have to backtrack, because you've been hearing it, but you haven't been listening to it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it takes some practice. Yeah, for sure. Well, in the graphic novel and audio thing, I'm listening to a couple graphic novels and audio now. There's a feature going to be in the next book list about graphic novels on audio, because it's
great.
The graphic novel spotlight.
I need that.
Yeah.
Like, in the middle of trying to create a list of...
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank
but
you
there's,
for that.
There's more
thank you for doing my work
welcome.
For me.
But you talk about different ways of experiencing books and thinking graphic novels on audio would never happen, but how else might a person with a visual impairment experience mm-hmm. a graphic novel? Well, adapting it for audio and trying to really pull in the experience, the sound experience of that visual format. And, you know, it occurred to me as I was putting this together, comics have always been very creative in how they incorporate sound. Mm-hmm. So there's zooms and there's pows and there's zaps and they're trying to come up with the right onomatopoeic word mm-hmm. for the sound that they want you to hear mm-hmm. in print and in with illustrations. And so there's a back and forth there that is kind of interesting.
I haven't ever listened to a graphic novel on audio. Mm-hmm. I need to add that to my... Do you have one that comes to mind when you think of that? Like, was there one that you can think of that was like... Because for me, I think Nimona was the first one that I heard about. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But is there one that, like, is the go-to now? Or the one that...
I think that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it depends on what you're looking for. I think if you really want to see what... Like, how well it can translate, I feel like Roller Girl is a good one. Mm-hmm. It's a full cast, and there's it's so fun too. It's such a great story on its own, but they went to a roller derby to record sound.
Oh, wow.
And they incorporated the real roller derby sound into the book, which is about a girl learning to be a part of the roller derby, the junior roller derby. But I think that producers are getting more creative about things like that and realizing that the sound effects can't be cheesy and they can't be the eye-rolly thing. Mm-hmm. It can't, yeah. You know, bringing those Foley artists and giving them
Foley
work.
That was what I was trying to get at.
Yeah. So that's a fun one and quick.
So this is one of my favorite parts of the podcast where we ask our guest to bring a bookish quote to share with us. And would you like to share yours?
Yeah. So mine is, we read to know we are not alone, which is C.S. Lewis. And like one of those quotes that ends up on library walls all the time. Uh-huh. But I love the way that I feel like this really speaks to my reading experience and why I became a librarian and how I like to talk to people about books. And I feel like it just kind of is so on the nose about what libraries are, mm-hmm. as institutions, as places. And even if for you, reading is a very solitary activity, the fact of having a book in your hands indicates that there's a whole world of people that made that happen.
Right.
It's the author, and if you really get into the nitty gritty of it, there's an agent, and there's an editor, and there's a publisher, and there's the people that stock the book, and there's the people that put together the promotional bit so that the librarians know to purchase it, and there's the librarian that put it on the shelf, and mm-hmm. it's just a whole ecosystem of people that work to get the books to readers. And then there's the other end of it, which is the reading experience and seeing other people's stories and understanding that somebody valued that story enough to write it down and then to bring it to you.
So the whole windows, mirrors, sliding glass doors,
yep.
experience. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
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 Yeah, I like that one a lot.
That's great. Yeah, and I think too, I don't know if we've ever talked about it before, but the importance of reading the author and the illustrator to a child when you're reading aloud to them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that gets overlooked, mm-hmm. and it's a really important part of literacy,
mm-hmm.
making the connection that there was a human that made the story and created these illustrations. Sometimes it's the same person, sometimes it's not. But when you're little, you kind of just think things appear.
Yeah.
Like you don't
have dinner.
Yeah. Exactly. Or like your clothes, like, you know, you don't think about that. And as you get older, you realize that, you know, everything that you interact with has people and things behind it that make it appear in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And I know just in my experience watching other people read to kids, that's a thing that gets left out a lot. And mm-hmm. that's like the most obvious part of the human experience that mm-hmm. goes into creating a book. So that's nice to think of like an ecosystem that is created around this one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's something I just kind of wish I could point out to people, especially when they're finding books that really resonate with them and they're struggling in their life, just, you know, especially, you know, it's Pride Month and kids that are finding like that LGBTQ romance that really sparks something for them and just point out that, you know, there are people who made that happen,
mm-hmm.
And they're people for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, you get the fandom that
right.
builds up around things. And that is such a powerful way for people to not feel like they're isolated,
mm-hmm.
too, because you come together over this one title or
yeah.
author or whatever, and you have this, you know, built-up experience that, you know, think of friendships that are made through this common enjoyment of something.
Yeah, for
right.
sure.
Yeah.
Or even additional art that's created through fan art or
mm-hmm. Fan fiction.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Or, you know, whatever the case may be, like creating a podcast around
mm-hmm.
one particular work mm-hmm. or character or idea. And that just keeps making that ecosystem spider out or web out mm-hmm. or arachnid out. I don't know. But nonetheless, yeah, that's such an interesting perspective. And also, like, that quote, like, you see it on a library wall and you think, oh, yeah. And, like, but actually thinking about...
Yeah, the mechanics of it. I think about it in terms of finding stories that make you feel like you're heard and you're seen. But I, you know, I definitely think that's part of it. And that's probably more so what C.S. Lewis was thinking when he wrote that, I would guess. But I think if you really kind of start dissecting it, there's so much that connects us through books. Mm-hmm. It's not just the stories. The stories are obviously pretty important.
I mean.
But yeah, there's a lot to it. Yeah. And just thinking about libraries as community places and, you know, centers of gathering and it's all, yeah. Mm-hmm. Books might be our business, but people are what really makes it
right.
important. Yeah.
They're books are why. Our foundation, but people are our business.
They're the business. They're the mm-hmm. why. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, Heather, thank you so much for joining us today and chatting books and audiobooks with us. Because clearly you have a lot of free time, so the fact that you came here and chatted with us is much appreciated. One more time, let's tell everybody Heather's books. So it was Dreaming in Cuban by Christina Garcia.
Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas by Russell and Lillian Hoban.
And Pillars of the Earth by Ken Follett. We will be back again next month where we are going to bring you the virtual version of our Children's Book Buzz presentation that we are doing later in June. So much like the one that we had in January, the staff members have agreed to share their buzzing with you, and then we will put that up for your ears and hopefully get some good ideas for children's books to yeah. listen to and read and purchase and all of those other great things.
So... You've been listening to Three Books, an Ela Area Public Library podcast.
It's engineered by David Olson and produced by us.
Our theme music is provided by Lache Swing.
We would love to hear what you're reading or listening to, so please write to us at threebookspodcast@gmail.com. Oh my, every single time with that Chicago accent. Three spelled out bookspodcast@gmail.com. I can't even do it without a Chicago accent now. We'd love to hear what you're reading. Rate us, review us on your listening place of choice so that other people can find us. It's really super important. If other people are going to listen, we need to have that support. So thank you in advance. On the Twitter, we're at 3BooksPod. And don't forget to subscribe.
If you're in the area, like Zurich, Illinois, stop by Ela Library or stop by your own public library to request a copy of the books you heard about today, if they have them, whether or not they're in print again or, you know, pending that. You can find the titles we've discussed as well as the links to the library's catalog at eapl.org/3books. And check out our three books titles. And you can find links to all the other things that we referenced today in our show notes.
You sure can. I'm Becca Boland.
And I'm Kristen Weiser.
Three later!